Shit, so to escape from reality? Yeah, I don't need this shit. I am reality. The way it ought to be, is the way it is.
Okay, guys, welcome to the show. This is Into the Apocalypse, episode 22. I'm your host, Adam. Chud X should be here shortly. It is Friday afternoon, March 25th. The year is 2022. We've been getting a lot of good feedback on our recent shows, guys, and I'm glad that everyone is enjoying them and keeping an open mind. We got some really good input from the Emmanuel Kingman episode. Some people had said once they saw the title, which I titled Y'all Need Jesus, they got a little bit nervous. Then they said they listened to the show and they said they really enjoyed it, and it really made them think. I think a lot of us grew up in the 80s, 90s, and were forced into some form of Christianity. And if I think if we would have been taught about the Nephilim and aliens and abduction and just being a good person and not being forced to feel guilty for doing normal everyday things that every human does and goes through, I think a lot of us would have stuck around. And maybe we all just need to retrain ourselves, like how we need to train ourselves with everything else that we've been taught. And admitting to yourself that we all did it. We all know that everything that they taught us. Oh, hey, Chud X, how's it going?
Hey.
I'm recording. I'm just kind of telling everybody that we've been getting really good feedback on our last episode.
Oh, and, good.
And a lot of people have been like, man, I saw the title and I really didn't even want to listen. And then I was saying, you know, a lot of us grew up in the 80s and 90s and were forced into some form of Christianity. And if the Christianity we had been exposed to would have taught us about aliens and Nephilim and demons and just like basic natural law and the golden rule instead of like guilt and all the other stuff that we learned, maybe a lot of us would have stuck around, you know?
Yeah. It's like Emmanuel and I were talking about with my experience in church. I was driven out of that church, you know? But that was because of that 80s bullshit.
Yeah. The more and more I think about it, like I think of all the 1980s televangelist stuff, the 700 Club, Jim and Tammy Faye Baker. Faye,
yeah.
And the more and more I think about it, I think all that stuff was a psyop to do exactly what it did to our generation.
Well, you know, remember when we talked with Old Scary World? He started touching on it. We didn't go too deep on it, but he was suggesting that back in those days, there were, there were those pamphlets that were out.
Yeah. All the time. Chick tracks.
Yeah. 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 There were those kinds of things going on. And like, I don't know, there were these people who, like, when I look at it in retrospect, they were saying, hey, quit watching the TV, quit being a part of this psyop that is pop culture. That's trying to take you down a bad path. And I kind of wonder if there were a bunch of people like that, and then it literally got psyop taken over with people who did the whole satanic panic thing, that the Tammy and Jim Baker kind of shit, like that pushed it out so far that by the mid to late 90s and into 2000, like it all fell apart because it was all these crazy extremists that were telling you that everything you're doing is wrong. But in reality, it was a small, it wasn't that many people who were saying, turn off your TV. And then the people that came in and really were loud, you know, they were not so much telling you to turn off your TV. They were saying, change the channel.
Yeah.
You know, they were saying, look at what we want you to look at. Don't look at whatever you want to. Don't listen to heavy metal. Listen to contemporary Christian rock, you know?
Yeah. Well, it was Amy Grant. Remember her? Yeah.
Amy Grant. I not really. I remember her name more than any. I don't think I could possibly remember a song.
Yeah, I can't either, but I'm sure she had a couple bangers. But what I was just equating it to, right, when I let you in, is we had to unlearn everything that was taught to us and view things through a different lens. And like, why is it any different with religion or spirituality, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that gets lost on a lot of people, even in our world.
Yeah.
So just be like, you got to unlearn everything that messed you up, just like you had to learn that, you know, the president isn't good and it's not all, the cops aren't there to help you and everything.
Democracy isn't perfect.
Yeah. And like, you know, it was easy for us to like, well, it was easy for me. A lot of people, it's not, but people in our world, it seems like it was easy to like look back on that and be like, yeah, that was kind of an easy thing to see now once it's done. But yeah. Other than that, I'm really happy with that last episode, and I'm glad that it got, I'm kind of thankful for the messed up audio and how it got broken to two tracks, because it forced me to actually go in, get into the editing software, watch some really basic YouTube videos and figure it out. And it's all
pretty simple. It's just a matter of jumping in.
Yeah. I've put this block up forever for a year and a half. Like, oh, I don't even know how to put a theme song in, you know?
There's been a charm to that, I think, within your podcast, that it's raw. It's like a live podcast, but you know, it's not actually live or whatever, but it's given a really authentic feel. But I don't think that I listened to that entire episode back, and it sounded great, man. Especially that intro. That was great. The music was awesome.
That was cool. And I've been messing around. I learned how to like fade it out and fade in and all this stuff like that. So I'm just like watching. It's cool. I've got the time to kind of figure it out. And then last night I was just messing around with it, and I was like recording clips off of YouTube. I made this really fun. I found the Penis Man clip that OBDM plays from on YouTube. I found like the whole news story, and then I isolated that part, like what they have. And then I recorded the opening of We Built This City by Jefferson Starship, just because it sounded funny. I was like, what's the fucking gayest song I can think of, you know? And that's the first thing that came into my mind. And then so I just took the first part of the track and like kept looping it. And then like every time I saw there was like a hard stop in like the sound wave, like a wall, I'd put that clip under it, and then I blended it. Yeah. So it's just like, it was super fun. My wife's out of town. I was just like clipping all this stuff off YouTube. And I made a pretty cool intro with some dialogue from Platoon, from Tom Berenger.
Cool. Yeah.
And one of my favorite punk rock songs all blended together. So I might use that as the intro on this one. And then somebody else from the Telegram group, I think, is going to write us or make us a beat for like a happy, fun one that we're going to use on the Deborah Gets Red Pilled episodes. And
excellent. Never ending. We're stepping up, man.
Maybe we could start like a whole separate clip show or something like that. So, but it's exciting. Great.
Hey, I got a quick update for you.
Okay.
Remember those pictures I showed you when we had Crutched and Chris on?
Yeah.
The bricks.
Yeah, the buried bricks underneath the street.
Yeah. So my instinct was right. I hopped that fence that day because I was like, I think they're getting ready to start working in here. Like, I should do this now before there's people there. Well, I went out and talked to a guy who was running an excavator out there the next day.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, what are you guys doing? You know, and he's like, oh, I don't really know. We're just putting this ramp in for someone's going to be doing some kind of construction down here. We're getting it so they can get equipment in and out. And I was like, yeah. And he started telling me, he was like, yeah, the building that used to be here was built in 1902. And he kind of like, I quickly picked up, he kind of knows, he doesn't know history, but he's interested by it as a construction worker. Like he knew the dates of some of the buildings and stuff.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, this is interesting. You know, like where is it going to go when I point to those bricks? And I did. And he was just like, oh yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's, you're going to find buildings under just about anywhere you're digging down, you know. Well, you know, what happened is they built all these cities, but they were too wet. So they took the hills that were behind these cities along the coast and they just bulldozed them all down. And that's why he said this. He said, that's why I've been in Seattle and I've been 20 feet below street level and I'm finding windows and doors and all kinds of stuff down there. And I was like, wow, that's really interesting, man. Have you ever heard of the conspiracy theory of Tartaria? He's no. And keep in mind, this guy's kind of grizzled and like 55, but I just barely laid it down for him in like a 30-second pitch. And he was just like, yeah, that all makes sense.
Yeah. That's awesome, man.
And then he was like, oh, my truck's here. I got shit to do. Can't stand around talking. But yeah, I thought that was interesting. He didn't really bat an eye at it. Like, but he gave me an explanation ahead of time too. Like, so he's been prepped on this kind of shit that like, it's because we bulldozed all the hills down.
Yeah.
And he did go when I said, yeah, it might've been like around 1850. I threw that year out there and he was like 1850. Yeah, it would have been, I wouldn't have made it in construction back then. Construction 1850 and older is so much harder than anything that's more modern. You know, that was tough stuff those people were doing. That was just all kind of interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool that he was at least open-minded to it, you know.
Yeah.
And didn't start crying.
No.
But let's see. Okay, let's do some business. Guys, yeah. you know how to get at us. Email. I made an Odyssey account finally. So if you want to, I'll probably put everything up on YouTube too, but Odyssey seems way cooler and it's like pretty easy to use and way easier to do thumbnails and stuff like that. So I put up the Midnight Mike episode and the Pause episode about Dogman.
Oh, cool. So
I got to find out if there's like a way to like automatically just take everything that's already on our YouTube and put over,
transfer it.
Yeah. Just like, wait, put it, do it overnight or something like that. But, yeah, but, and then let's see. Okay. So we got a donation from our old friend, Chris Tropp. You'll be associate producer for this episode. Thanks, Chris. And
yes, thank you.
Let's see. What else is going on? I think that's it for news, but get in the Telegram, guys. And let's see, get in the Telegram, go check out the merch store. If you want to buy something in the merch store, get in the Telegram and you can get 15% off, which pretty much eliminates all profit for us, but who cares? We're not making any money in there anyway. So I'd rather a bunch of people rock our shit. We should get some more stuff in there, maybe get bags, draw some more stuff for us.
I think just the fact that there's anybody out there wearing Meriwether Lewis didn't kill himself t-shirt,
yeah,
fucking rules.
it might just be Matt Terrellon at this point from Great Deception, but
one is more than none.
Yeah, and if at least it's him, at least, you know.
Yeah.
So but other than that, how's spring going on the homestead, man? Is it ramping up over there?
It's ramping up quick.
Yeah.
Trying to get finished on this chicken tractor.
Is it for meat birds?
For meat birds.
Did you order them already?
No, not yet.
Cool.
I wanna make sure that I got this all together before I order anything.
Yeah. If you get them from a hatchery, you can usually like have, like they give you like a whole bunch of different dates. They have like hatching dates, like weekly hatching dates. And you can usually, they'll be like on this date, there's this many of this left. Mm-hmm. So they got it pretty much down to a science. How many are you guys going to do?
I think we're looking at 25.
That's a good number.
Yeah.
I'll come up I'll come up and help you process them.
Oh, that would be amazing. Yeah.
That'll be fun. And then maybe I'll do a run mid-summer that will be done in early fall when it's still warm out, and you guys can come help with that or something like that. Yeah, that'd be cool.
That'd be great. Great. Trade some labor there.
Yeah. Did you all get at least, you know, just keep our skills sharpened up? You know, I can show you a little bit. I've done it before at least, so I know I can do it. So I can show you that. I can show you guys, I can tell you the YouTube videos that I watched that I learned how to do it from.
And if it goes well for us this year, I want to do a second batch later. Just to keep it moving and doing it.
That's my whole. Yeah. If you could do 50 a year, have one chicken dinner a week for a year, you know, and then broth and soup and all that stuff with it, you know, it takes care of at least 2 or 3 days worth of food for you for a week. And a chicken costs what to make a full chicken probably costs $10.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the way to do it. Plus it's got all the, I don't know, when it's coming from your property,
yeah,
it's been feeding on your land and all that. Like, it's, I think it's so much better for you.
Yeah. I saw Tractor Supply had a big sale. They were, if you went and bought a bag of meat bird feed, they gave you 5 of them for free.
Really? 5 were, birds?
Yeah.
Whoa.
5 That's chicks. Kinda cool. They're only $1.50 each though. So, what kind did you guys order?
We haven't ordered yet.
All right. What kind are you guys thinking of?
I think we're looking at Cornish cross.
Cool. That's what I did. That's a good one to do for the first time. It's the easiest and the shortest. Mm-hmm.
It's like 8 weeks.
It's 8 weeks. And, I did 8 weeks and it might've been 2 weeks too many. Mm-hmm. And mine were too big.
Yeah.
And they were
stationary.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I fed them too much. You guys are going to have them out on the pasture. So
yeah.
Are you going to, do you supplement it with feed as well or just let them?
I'm going to try and feed them as little as possible.
Cool.
But I'm going to probably have to play it a little by ear. Yeah. See how they're doing.
Yeah. How can you tell if they need more food?
Gee, that's a bridge I got to cross.
Yeah.
Well, I figure that their temperament's going to get weird if they're hungry, you know, but I don't know. It's going to take a little research as we go, I think is the way it's going to need to be.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm planning on, I'm having like a little trough feeder that I hang in there.
You make it out of a PVC pipe or something.
Just going to make it out of an old gutter.
Cool. Great idea.
You know, and just hang it from side to side.
Yep.
So I'm making the whole thing out of PVC.
Oh, so it's light. That's a good idea.
Super light. I'm just doing a square frame for the base and then running arches of this PVC that I have laying around. It's real old that I'm going to go across there and then just put a hatch across one side of it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I got a bunch of old PVC. Maybe I'll check it out and I can put that stuff to use.
Yeah. Yeah. We found so much PVC just like hidden around, you know, in the blackberries. As I was taking blackberries out, I'd be like, oh, there's another little cache of it. Yeah. Now I got a whole bunch. I've used it for lots of things throughout this, but I still have plenty. So
going on it. Yeah. Our sheep hasn't given birth yet.
I was going to ask, how's the sheep doing?
They're doing great. I mean, they're easier than chickens, dude.
Yeah.
I fill up their water every third day. Yeah, they tip it over when it gets down to like a third.
Uh-huh.
And I go over and I turn it, stand it back up and fill it up with water and then go like talk to them. I go out and drink coffee with them in the morning. And
there you go.
The male is super awesome. He's like really nice guy. He comes up and hangs out right next to you and wants to be like pet.
Yeah.
Wants to have his neck scratched.
Oh, that's great.
But the Prego one's a little skittish still, but yeah, they're just out there. Hanging out. I got the fence, electric fence up, and they're just chilling. They're living the life, you know.
Are you planting anything this year?
Oh, I want to. I'm having like a little bit of anxiety about that. I'm definitely not gonna have a 4,000 square foot garden this year.
Right. But maybe throw some seeds here and there, see what you
I'd like to get the area that I have marked off, like plowed or tilled up, you know, and then
maybe you got a tiller?
I have a AgriFab tiller that goes, it's got a Briggs and Stratton motor on it. It goes to a riding mower. They're really cool. There's like three companies, like Craftsman makes one, AgriFab makes one, and some other company makes it. And it's all exactly the same.
Yeah.
And it's all like, you can get parts and stuff for it. So, but it's pretty cool. I got it off some guy on Craigslist. They're like $1,500 new. I got a, some guy on Craigslist brand new for half the price. So hopefully it works.
Yeah, that's great. We've got a bunch of seeds in the ground now.
Yeah.
Not a ton, but a bunch. You know, started about 2 weeks ago. We started putting our first seeds in. And you know, for early stuff, might have been a little too early. We still had some pretty heavy frost since then, but you know, we'll see what comes up. And we're gonna keep moving on that. Lanny's outside right now, she's collecting nettles. We collected a lot last year, but we were late on the game.
Yeah.
We were doing it when they were old, they were tall, you know, they're 4 or 5 feet tall. So we were just taking the tops off, but she's out there getting down while they're still kind of purple and short. And we're going to probably dry some, probably make some pesto with some, you know, just kind of use it as much as we can.
Cool.
It's for me, I think I might've said it on here before, like, you know, nettles are, you know, I grew up, they're evil. They're bad. They hurt. Yeah. They're no good. And when we moved out here, you know, it was like, well, we got a lot of blackberries and we got a lot of stinging nettles. You know, what are you going to do? We can eat the blackberries, but I didn't really, and I knew that nettles were edible, but I don't know, using a whole lot last year. It was like, man, it's kind of awesome. Taking the thing that I grew up learning to fear, and now it's nourishing me. It's we're eating it and it's good for us.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I haven't seen any here, but we don't really have much wooded area on our property.
Yeah.
I think it all got logged. So, but
well, when you get them, you've got them.
Yeah.
I mean, they crawl. Their root systems are intricate. They're not deep and they're thick. They're not like, they're not like buttercups or other noxious weeds that like have really thick, hard, root systems. But, they just kind of like, they're only an inch below, but they'll, you know, if you get the right one and you start pulling up, you can just get just a ton of them and a big spider web of them.
Cool. Our guest just popped into the waiting room.
All right. We got Marty Leeds today, huh?
Yeah. Marty Leeds, 33.
Yes. This is exciting.
So, yeah. I'm a little nervous. I listened to a bunch of podcasts with him on it today. And you got some good, I hope you got some good stuff for him about like Sky Clock and stuff like that.
I'm going to wing it. But
okay.
Yes.
Cool. You know that stuff better than I do, so you can deal with that. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's pause for a minute. We'll bring him in and get going again. All right, guys, we're back. And today we are here with our guest, Marty Leeds, 33. Welcome to Into the Apocalypse. Marty, how's it going?
Pretty good.
Yeah,
thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're really, really excited. I was really excited to see when you emailed me back. And I've been prepping all day, listening to a bunch of podcasts that you've been on. And we kind of do a monthly theme on this show. We did, I think we did cryptids last month. We did Tartaria the month before. And we're kind of getting into some weird alternate Christianity this month. So, really excited to talk to you about Gnostic Christianity and your thoughts on the shape of the earth and homesteading and being off the grid. And Chud X and I are both homesteaders here in the Pacific Northwest. So yeah, we're excited to get into it. So
where are you guys at?
I'm in Northwest Oregon and Chud X is in Northwest Washington.
Oh, okay.
So yeah.
Yeah, I lived in Eugene, and then I lived up what's the town? It's south of Portland. I forget that there's two towns there. Anyway, I basically lived all around that whole area for, I don't know, maybe 10 years or something.
Yeah, I'm northwest of Portland, halfway between Astoria and Portland.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool.
So, do you know where St. Helens is?
Yep. I know that. I mean, I know that whole area. When I was younger, we went all around. That was sort of our stomping ground. So I've been all up and down Washington, Oregon, Northern California, quite a bit. I mean, yeah, hiked all around Oregon.
Yeah.
And yeah, lived in Eugene for, and then Cottage Grove, which is just like South Eugene for, right. I don't know, 8 years, 10 years, something like that. So
yeah, cool. That's great. It's beautiful out here.
Yeah.
So yeah.
You're in Wisconsin now, right?
Yeah, we moved from Hawaii. Yeah, we're in basically on the border of UP and Wisconsin.
Got it.
Out in the middle of the shticks. Yeah. Nowhere. So
is it
they bought an old hunting cabin.
Yeah.
And so kind of renovated it, and yeah, that's where we're living.
Great.
That's why I'm in my car, because we have no service about 10 minutes that way. So
all right on. Thanks for doing that for us. So you had to flee from Hawaii, right?
I mean, not really. We didn't really flee. I mean, kind of, but it was mainly just because my family is on the mainland.
Yeah.
And we were all, before any of this stuff hit, we were already like, fuck flying, you know, like we were just, you know, but my wife, her family lives in Germany. And then, you know, my stomping grounds is Wisconsin, Southern, really. And so when we decided to move out to Hawaii, it was kind of like, well, we knew we were going to have to fly to either get to Germany or my parents. So I was like, okay, well, we can bite the bullet, you know, twice a year to do it or whatever it is, you know, go through all the rigmarole at the airport and all that bullshit. But then when COVID-19 hit, it was just kind of like, I don't know, forever, you know? So we basically got off the island so we could be with my folks, basically.
Yeah.
You know, they're getting older. That, you know, and we didn't know what the flying situation was going to be. And as of right now, I mean, Germany's pretty much total communist. So we can't even get in that country right now without, I think, either being double jabbed or tested. And then even if you're tested, it's like, I think, a 10-day quarantine or something. I'm not sure what the latest and greatest is, of course. But so as of right now, it's like, we're not going back to Germany at all. So yeah, it's just the situation is what it is, you know? So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody knew what they were getting into. That was probably a good move though. Just getting onto some mainland instead of being where you might have to hop on a plane at some point.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like Jennifer and I said, my wife said, if it wasn't for my parents and my brother that live here, we would have just stayed, you know? I mean, you got to fight communism everywhere. It's not like, you know, there's better places to be right now, but it's coming everywhere. Don't think that, you know, so if it wasn't for my folks, we would have just stayed. But because of them, we're like, no, let's, you know, and the situation in Hawaii beyond the COVID-19 stuff, I don't know. It's a sketch place. Like it's real. I mean, the politics and basically the police and stuff like that is hella corrupt. There is just, it's just layers upon layers of corruption there. And then there's a whole element of like, basically when we got there, I didn't know this stuff when we moved there, but basically it's legally, it's an overthrown kingdom. It's basically a military occupied island. And so the legal gray, you know, when you get into the legal system, the areas get really gray really quick. And there's a lot of sketch shit that goes on. So me being who I am and, you know, knowing that at some point, you know, they were going to call people like ourselves terrorists and stuff like that, that was sort of ringing in the back of my head too, because there it's, you know, I don't know. It's sketch. It really is.
So. Yeah. I remember a while back, Charlie Robinson did a episode all about Hawaii on macroaggressions. It was pretty good, but yeah, he got into a lot of that stuff and what the U.S. military had done to take power from the natives there. So,
We don't need to go into this too much, but it was pretty eye opening when moving there because I really had no idea. I was just like, oh, yeah, cool, yeah, let's go live off grid, fuck it,
yeah,
you know, whatever, yeah. And then, you know, let's grow fruit year round and go to the ocean and. And there's all of that, which was amazing and great. There was so many positives, but there almost like there was just as many negatives, and the negatives were growing. And yeah, one of the big things that I learned there was, yeah, I mean, it's, as far as it's concerned on the books, it's a military occupied place. That's what it is. That's, it's not really a state anymore. It's not, you know, it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, that's wild. I just had a really good question in the back of my head and I spaced it. So we've in Oregon and Washington, we just dropped our mask mandates like a couple weeks ago. I think on the 12th was the first day. And it seems like there's this reprieve. Everybody else is worried about the fake war going on in Ukraine and everything like that. What do you see? You know, everybody's kind of letting their guard down. What do you think is on the horizon?
Well, it's just I don't know how long their plan is, but it's just a slow change of society over the next 10 years. So this is, it's just a slow rolling out of their plan. It's every step along the way. And so I think they were just going to push the COVID-19 stuff as far as they could. And then when that faded out, it's like, no one's held accountable for any of this stuff. And people just forget. Most people just want to move on. So they're just going to move on to the next thing and whatever the next thing is. I mean, as far as their plan is concerned, it seems like the particular takedown of especially the Western countries, especially Canada and the United States, purposeful takedown of these countries, slowly but surely they're poking into, basically making destabilizing sections of the country. Slowly this business goes out and this business goes out, and then these, slowly, so it will fall and it will seem more natural anyway. But and then from there, what it is: digital currency, digital ID. It's total and complete control. And I think the first move into this was because they're occultists, the big thing was to initiate everyone into this next level of society that they're trying to create. And the mask thing was huge because that's just well known in different tribal societies and stuff like that, that masks were used for initiatory rituals in order to transform you and for whatever the ritual would be, transform you and from one state into the next. And so they did this en masse with everybody, And so, yeah, they are agents of chaos. What's the next move? They're going to keep bringing more chaos.
Yeah.
In any way that they can. And it's so funny because I say that. And because a lot of people, when you look at what's going on, a lot of people be like during the whole COVID-19 thing, people were saying, none of this makes any sense. Why are they doing this? And it's like, this guy's, Fauci's, completely going back on something he said 2 weeks ago. And then they said, the vaccines was this, and now it's this. And it's all confusing and none of it makes sense. And the whole point is, none of it's supposed to make sense.
Yeah, it's all doublethink. They get you, they change the rules over and over and over again. Don't wear a mask, wear a mask, stay 6 feet apart, stay 5 feet apart, 3 feet's fine. Nope, we're back to six. Cloth masks don't work. It's got to be a medical mask. Medical masks don't work. It's got to be an N95. N95 works for you, but it's worse for other people around you. And it just makes it so that everybody gets into a state of mind where they got to wake up and turn on the news to find out what's today like.
Yeah.
Do I work today? Do I not work today? Am I allowed to walk in the store? Do I need to stay away from people or not? They fill us with so many conflicting things. And when I say us, I mean them, all the people around us, because I'm not falling for it. But yeah, if people are paying attention to that all the time and abiding by it, more than paying attention, because I paid attention. But if you're abiding by that all the time, you wait for your daily orders. That's what it comes down to.
It's basically scrambling people's reality so that the only thing, like you're saying, the only thing they can accept is the reality that's authority figures are handing them. Yeah. I mean, what they're, they've been doing it for a while, but now they've really flipped the switch on after COVID-19 is basically gaslighting all of reality. Mm-hmm. It's what they've been doing for a long time. It's just now it's a lot more complete, more total, more psychopathic, and more in your face, to the point where that's now they know that we know, and they don't give a fuck. They're just we know that we're, that we're liars and that this is all a scam. We're just going to keep doing it anyway. Why?
It seems to be able to work faster now too. The way they were able to flip the switch and go over to Ukraine from wearing a mask. I mean, that it happened overnight, at least from where I was sitting.
I mean, I don't know about you guys, but it's been, that's been one of the biggest shocks for me throughout this whole thing. Is like, as a fairly educated person, it's like, you know, that people are that there's a lot of really stupid people out there. Let's just say it. I mean, I don't mean to say stupid, but uneducated, you know, has the potential. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to be a dick. Has the potential, but clearly is not gone down that road, or, you know, that sort of thing. So just, you know, mind-numbingly stupid people is when it comes down to it. And I knew that
sometimes the most mind-numbingly stupid people are the most highly educated people too.
For sure. Often. Yeah. Because it's yeah. Yeah. That's another conversation right there for sure. Because they're basically just regurgitating animals at this point.
It's easier to train a smart dog, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And what was I going to say? Anyway, I knew, yes, I'm sorry. I knew people were, you know, uneducated and that sort of stuff, but I had no idea they were so programmable. And that's what you saw with COVID-19. And it happened at my work, which was amazing because I was working at this vet in Hawaii. And, you know, I'm a pretty hard worker. You know, I show up and my papa taught me right. You know, like, have a good work ethic. You show up, you know, it was this kind of thing that I was grew up with. Like, you work for yourself. You don't work for somebody else, which means you show up for you every day kind of thing, you know?
Right.
So when I worked at that vet, like, they fucking loved me. It was like 2 weeks and they wanted me to manage the place. And I was like, look, I got just too much stuff going on. Otherwise I would happy, you know, the entire time that, you know, I got raise after raise, and then the COVID-19 thing hit. And I said, well, I'm not doing any of that stuff. And next thing you knew, all of these people that at one point they loved and adored me. Now the switch was flipped in their head. So now I'm the enemy, and that's all it took. And it was so shocking to see how programmable people were.
Right.
It's really, and that was something that's like I said, I knew people were just kind of mindless, but my God. And that's what you're seeing now. It's like, okay, now you drop the mask. Now Ukraine, you know.
Well, they're all so programmable. And it's like something I just had a customer here and we were talking about like how voluntary this has all been too. And that like, you know, okay, there's mask mandates, right? But did any businesses, I don't know about state to state or even county to county, but where I live, no businesses got like a packet from the state or the county or any place else that said, here's the new guidelines or anything like that. They told us there was a mask mandate. And then all of a sudden, all these businesses started enforcing it just because they were told, just because it was said, you know, like in a restaurant, like if you have to bring beef to 155 degrees before you can serve it, and they change that to 160, all the restaurants, anybody serving meat is going to get like a packet about it. And they're going to have to like retrain people and like all these things. But that never happened with any of these measures in COVID. It was just the business owners heard on the news that there's a mask mandate. And then they all started enforcing. They never got an actual memo that told them what to enforce, how to enforce it. That's why it was all so willy-nilly, you know, whether or not cloth masks or, you know, like I had a gator that I'd put up occasionally to get into a store or something. Then all of a sudden one day a store that I'd been to said, oh no, the gator's not good enough. You need one of these, and tried to hand me a medical mask or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like nobody told them that. It's they just decided, you know, we all did this to ourselves. Just by being asked. We're programmable, and we don't even need an official source on that programming.
You know, the good thing about all this though is I think a lot of people did wake up to the fact that there are, you know, it's like you keep seeing this thing about, it's like, oh, the conspiracy theorists were right kind of thing. Like, people are starting to wake up to the fact that, like, yeah, there's a hidden hand behind this shit. Mm-hmm. That there are people that are, you know, and your average, there's a lot of normies that I know that woke up because of this, because things just, you know, they had some sense of reason, where when things were just so outrageously not making sense, it was like, well, what's going on, you know? So I don't know. It's crazy times we live in, man. You know, we've been saying for many years that the people behind the scenes, they're occultists, they're wizards. And that's the level that they operate on. So if you do not understand that level of sort of like esoteric wisdom or that sort of shit, like, you're always going to fall short from understanding what these people kind of do, you know? And it's hard for people to understand the level of evil too. It's hard for me to understand it, really. But anyway, yeah.
as a spiritual guy, Marty, who do you think pulls the strings at the highest levels?
Well, you mean like who's like orchestrating this stuff?
Who's they?
Yeah, like who's orchestrating, who's they kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, when you get down to it, like this is the thing I've been saying lately too, is that, you know, if you're looking like into politics, it's just bullshit. Politics is just a means to an end for these people, you know. It all has to do with theology, you know. And theology, then you get into theology and you get into, I mean, it's kind of a cartoon thing to say, but, you know, there are true Satanists in the world. And that Satanist doesn't mean you have to go down to the Church of Satan. Satanism, you know, in this sense could just mean just freaking psychopaths that believe in a sacred and profane ideology and theology, which just basically means we're all cattle to them. And it does, a lot of times it doesn't matter race or ethnicity or culture or anything like that. Just there are people in the world thinks that, oh, you know, like the social Darwinism kind of shit too. Like, oh, I was born into this family and this family's rich. And this proves that God is, you know, looking upon us as the, you know, the righteous ones and the ones that are to control earth. You know, you can get into the Judaism question there as well. I mean, that's a sacred and profane theology right there at the core of it. So when that's taught or practiced in an extreme orthodox way, then you have, I mean, that alone brings despotism and tyranny, period. So you couple that with them working in conjunction, international interests with communists, psychopaths, these sorts of things, you know, that's ends up who it, you know, who is running the show. It doesn't necessarily have to be one single group. But the other thing too is, now, you know, we can see a lot who are these groups are, even if they're the puppets, those puppets still know who's working. And that includes your WEFs, you know, your World Economic Forums and your UNs and, you know, a lot of these people that are working, you know, specifically behind these organizations. So I don't know if that's not a direct answer because it's not necessarily like one dude or thing. You know what I mean? It's not like, it's obviously international interests, cabal working together, and they their ultimate interests are, they don't give a shit about anything that we care about, nothing.
So does Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer know about this?
Yeah, I mean
they do.
Yeah, I mean I would say that a majority, I can't say it exclusively, you know, like this isn't an umbrella statement or anything like that, but I would say a majority of the people that work, this includes the Ron DeSantis, this includes the, you know, those sorts of characters. You don't get to those positions without being compromised.
Right.
Wow. You just don't get there. And so and this is why you see like Ron DeSantis right now, he's like sort of like the, it's like he's given the right and Republicans a little breathe or whatever, or a little relief or something like that. Cause you see him on, he's saying all the things that they want him to say, right? Yeah. We need to end CRT and free, you know, Florida's going to remain free and blah, 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 blah. He's one of them, you know?
Yeah. Ask him how he feels about Israel.
Yeah, exactly. As soon as you ask any, I mean, this is the thing you really need to know too, as far as like who's compromised or not, just ask real questions. You know what I mean? And you'll get, you know, it's just like somebody just asked, the governor of Texas?
Abbott.
Abbott, yeah. They just asked him.
Wheels, Hot Wheels.
Yeah. they just asked him about the World Economic Forum. And he just skirted the answer. He's just like, well, I'm for America. No. Denounce those motherfucker. Denounce those people. He's like, well, you know, America first or whatever. You know, it's just all bullshit.
Yeah, so, if we had a politician who was willing to say, to throw them under the bus and say that they're a bad organization, then we'd be dealing with something different. But you're not going to hear that from any politicians.
And you're not going to hear it on television at all. I mean, it's just like Tucker Carlson. That's another, it's just theater. You know, a lot of these people become outlets and it's like, it's almost like to make people feel like things are happening and things are going their way when really it's just entertainment. Like when you look at, like, I would say this for this is my opinion anyway, but at Veritas, you know,
yeah,
you know, whatever, that's basically just entertainment. You know, Steven Crowder is, you know, yeah, he might expose something here and there. And people are like, oh, see, you know, the left, they're the bad. It's just, you know, to keep people, you know, occupied while the real agenda moves on.
Yeah, you know. Steven Crowder is really good at dunking on like 19-year-olds with green hair, but beyond that, like he's not doing much, you know.
Well, and like I said, the truth doesn't lie in politics at all. Like if at this point for me, if you're talking politics, you literally have no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
You don't have a fucking clue, because most of these people would be like, the left, it's the left. What are you talking about? No, it's not. I'm not saying Democrats are good or something. Like, that's what I'm saying, but that's not the issue. You're dealing with social engineering and mind control and occultism, and these are your issues. So politics is what, you know, politics is, what do they say? It's a classic statement adage, like, it's politics is downstream from truth or something.
Downstream like from culture.
Culture, is that what it is? Something.
Yeah, like that's a Breitbart quote.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah.
I picked that out of the back of my head somewhere. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, this has been good so far. We brought you on to talk about Gnostic Christianity and flat Earth. So, can we get into that with you, man?
Yeah. Sure.
I'd like to hear from a kindergarten level about Gnostic Christianity. Can you do that for us?
Yeah, I just did a 2-hour sermon on it a couple of weeks ago, and
I
really
saw that.
I really laid it out for people, because what I kind of do with a lot of these topics is take a lot of people's they have misconceptions, or they have a lot of ideas in their head that they assume to be true, and I try to take those and just sort of, you know, wipe the slate clean and start fresh and anew. And yeah. So I do that with a lot of topics, and Gnosticism is one of them. So Gnosticism is basically exactly how the practice or whatever of Gnosis is defined. Gnosis is knowledge of spiritual mysteries. That's it. That's what it is. So when you pursue Gnosis, the only thing you're really doing at the core of Gnosticism is pursuing knowledge of spiritual mysteries. Well, I mean, this pursuit is basically at the core. It's the same self-initiatory process you would do. So autodidactic, self-initiatory process you would do in engaging the mysteries, in pursuing the mysteries. And the mysteries are exactly what anybody that like basically gets into spirituality or religion pursues: a meaning to life. What's the meaning of life? What am I doing here? Where am I going? Where did I come from? Is there a God? If there's a God, am I just supposed to believe it? No, I want to prove that. Okay. Then, you know, that's the avenue that you're going down. This is what, Christ talked about. He's like, you know, and to you, it is given to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to others, it is not. Specific language actually that Christ is saying, that's speaking directly about Gnosticism, pursuing these spiritual mysteries. So that's essentially what it is. Gnosticism also is at the core of it. There's some ideas that are sort of grafted onto Gnosticism that are deeply esoteric that people look at exoterically. That's a different discussion. But one of the other key things about Gnosticism is essentially not following tradition or the religious authorities. And it isn't to say that Gnostics completely abandon religious tradition or don't listen to some religious speakers or ministers or that sort of thing. It's saying ultimately you do not go to them for your answer. Gnostics go to have that experience with God himself. And in that experience, have what you could use. I mean, it sounds sort of new agey, but enlightened consciousness, higher levels of a consciousness, a deeper understanding of your world and your place in it. And that's what Gnosticism is. Gnosticism doesn't require any dogmas or doctrines. It doesn't say that you have to do this or have to do that. It basically says it's up to you. You have to put yourself on the path, and no one's going to be kicking your ass on the way to say, well, you got to keep going. You got to keep going. You got to get up that mountain. You have to do it.
So. Are there any specific texts that Gnostic Christians use that are different from, say, you know, just the Old Testament and the New Testament?
Well, there's tons of different, this is the other thing, is like, there's tons of different viewpoints of Gnostics. Like, Gnostics will believe different things depending on different orders and, you know, that sort of thing. So that's, I guess, a question you'd have to ask like any particular Gnostic. But as far as all the, you know, Gnosticism I studied, they all led to the Bible. I mean, they were all, most of them were the Christians that you are studying, or at least, you know, at least, or Torah, one of the two, you know. So as far as like other books, there are other books like Ellen Page Olds has, I think, written the Gnostic Gospel or something like that. There's some books like that. But in general, Gnosticism, like I said, isn't like a, maybe I didn't say this, but it isn't like necessarily a particular set of beliefs like, oh, we read these books and we believe this. It's really more of a pursuit, you know. So Gnosis, it once again is that pursuit of knowledge of spiritual mysteries. It doesn't say, oh, you have to read this book in order to do that, and you have to go down this, like, and you have to meditate like this and three times a day and have to face fucking east and blah 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 blah, you know. It basically takes all that away and says, okay, you got to make the path.
Yeah, it's more like you should read all the books that you want to, at least.
Okay, so this is the other thing about Gnosticism. I would say it's it's embracing all the great traditions, because they realize that beyond the veil, beyond the carnal, beyond the exoteric of all these traditions lies a great truth that's transcendental. And in that very sense of the word, meaning it transcends all the limitations, all the divisions of language, culture, race, religion, beliefs, blah 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 blah. Doesn't care about your race, doesn't care about your beliefs, doesn't care about your religion, doesn't care. It transcends all of those things. And right. So the Gnostic recognizes that all the great traditions have that at the core of it, and it can be found. And so I, you know, I've said it like this: the Gnostic doesn't say, you know, per what you were saying, apropos to what you were saying, was Gnostic doesn't come along and say, no, 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 I'm not going to read the Bhagavad Gita. No, the De Dao Ching's not for me, even though I might be on a Christian path. It's saying, yes, 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 I'll read this and I'll read this, knowing that ultimately beyond the whatever, the shellac or whatever, if you will, that layer, there's the truth.
Yeah. Well, everything you're saying so far sounds an awful lot like what the pursuit that I'm on, you know, where I don't consider myself a follower of Christ at this point, but I'm certainly not against Christ. You know, I'm so open to everything. You know, this journey really started for me 10-ish years ago, when I started looking at, I started getting into alternative archaeology. And that made me really interested in like Egyptian things and stuff like that. And just like, you know, I don't know, kind of the deeper I would dig at anything, the more mysterious everything would become. And, you know, it kind of led to this path of spirituality that I can't define at this point in time. But it's gotten me all the way to the point where I'm even praying, but I'm not sure. I couldn't say who I'm praying to or what I'm praying to. But I'm kind of pursuing every path that I possibly can and just trying to get deeper, because I kind of think at the end of all of it, and I'm far, far, far from the end of it. All of these things, all the religions, all of the ancient cultures and everything are kind of all one thing. And it's like a matter of if I just keep looking at, if I look really hard in this direction for a little while and look really hard in another direction for a while and then go a completely different direction, like every time I feel more complete.
I mean, it sounds like to me you're on the right path, because it's, you know, just the fact that you said you're like, oh, I'm praying, but I don't even know what I'm praying to, or, you know, that sort of thing. It's like that is like the terminology that you hear in the Bible, like when Christ is saying, knock and it shall be opened unto you, ask and you shall receive. Mm-hmm. When you are going out and you're like saying, I don't know what this path is, but I'm trying to find answers and I'm genuine about it, that's knocking. That's what you're doing. And, you know, you have to do that for years, as you've already done it for 10 years, right?
It'd probably right. Well, be about 10. Maybe more like 3, but it started 10 years ago, but I didn't start knocking, you know?
And yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, you'll be on it for a long time. Yeah. You know, and I mean, I would say that, you know, as far as like that, it's like, yeah, there was times where many years I was knocking and not really receiving any answers, more questions, you know. And then some of the things, conclusions, not even conclusions to come to, but some of, I wouldn't say conclusions, but some of the roads that I was going down were total bullshit. Mm-hmm. I mean, looking back on it, not a waste of time, because obviously it was
a stepping stone to a higher understanding or whatever, but literally all the time spent down that path was bullshit. All of it, you know, and that's what you have to do. It's crazy. It's just how it works. So yeah, I mean, that's the Gnostic path. The Gnostic path, there's so many, and this is why a lot of Christians don't like Gnostics, because so many Christians, they have to have everything in a nice little box. You know, this is how we pray, and this is what ritual we do, and this is what, no, you have to believe in Christ, and you have to say these things, and if you don't agree, blah, 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 blah. And Gnostics don't do any of that. You know, they just don't, because it's like, well, I'm assuming most Gnostics throughout history were somewhat in the same sort of boat that I was in when I would look to people's explanations of the Bible and what this stuff was. I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. You clearly don't know what you're talking about, but yet you're just, well, you got to believe it. If you don't, you're going, you know? And so the Gnostic has the fortitude to go into that and be like, man, I'm going to figure it out myself.
Yeah.
You know, how does Jesus fit into all of it?
I mean, it's a huge question. No, it's all right. It's like, the perfected man, you know, there's, when you talk about cross-cultural, you know, that basically all the great traditions have the same truth behind them, right? That sort of thing. When you, you guys are all paused now. Did I lose my?
Oh, you got it.
You're coming through fine.
Yeah, you're okay. Coming through fine on our end.
Okay, sorry. When you get past, like when you look at all the great traditions and you get past and you get to the heart and there's a truth behind there, right? When you look at most of these cultures, you have this idea of a hero figure or a perfected man. You know, it's been given a bunch of different names, Anthropocosm, Adam Kadmon, whatever, right? But it's this idea that essentially that you are to, you're on your path in life, in your journey to sort of fulfill this in your life. And in Christ, that would be Christ, right? That you're trying, you want to get on that path. You want to pick up, you want to take your cross and follow him, right? That's the thing that's leading you, is this sort of hero figure, redeemer, savior. Well, that figure has been in countless cultures. Yes, expressed in a different way, in a different smattering of this, different disciples, blah, 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 blah. But the general themes are there clearly. And there's a whole, just a boatload of smorgasbord of literature, like not only detailing this, but lauding it for exactly what it is, like sacred and divine. That basically, once again, when you go into every single one of these cultures, they had this sort of hero figure because these cultures found something transcended within the creation itself, within nature itself, an inherent universal religious process of you going through this spiritual ascent, this journey into going from the old to the new, being reborn, death and resurrection, and reaching this sort of state of salvation. Well, in our language and in our holy book, that's called Christ. That's Jesus Christ. But in the Egyptian, that was Horus. And in the other one, it was Adonis. And the other one, it was Tammuz. And then the guys over there was Krishna. And then over there, it was Buddha, right? And also, so,
is it the same as the kind of the hero's journey that you hear like Jordan Peterson talking about all the time?
That is something, that general idea, right? Is something that, I mean, this gets into the Masonic conversation, but when you get into the literature of Freemasonry, you'll read about this shit all day long. Like scholars for hundreds and hundreds of years have been talking about this stuff. And so hero's journey, the process of death and rebirth, it's you'll find smatterings of it or reflections of it in all sorts of ways, right? In masonry, it'll be turning the rough ashlar to the perfected ashlar. In alchemy, it's turning lead into gold. In Catholicism, what it's called the purpose of amendment or whatever, right? Coming to Christ, being reborn, right? These are all basically the same reflection, same idea in different, told in different ways, you know? I say it like this, this is how we can look at it. There's something transcendent. It's the number 7. We could put 7 dots on a screen. Here's the transcendence. It's 7. Now there's all these different ways to explain number 7. Here's sept. Here's the French sept. Here's the German sieben. Here's the English 7. Here's the, you know, blah, 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 blah. You can go to all these different languages and they all have different words, right? They're sept, sieben, 7, but they're all talking about the exact same thing. And this is essentially what Gnosticism does. It looks past the veil goes to the heart of it. And in our time, in our language, in our holy book, that's Christ. So, and that's why that's what this whole journey's led me to. So,
yeah, I like that with the different languages.
Can I say one more thing? Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Can I say one more thing?
And
on the journey, it brought, I was kicking and screaming. Like, meaning, like, sometimes I didn't want to go. But it was just like, no, you got to go here. No, you got to go here. Keep going, kind of thing, you know? So.
Yeah, I love it. I like what you were saying with seven and then all the different languages and stuff, but they all kind of mean the same thing. It's like, that's what I'm saying with looking at different cultures, different religions, different things. And I kind of think, you know, it's all the same thing, but it just, the two people don't, if you're speaking different languages, you might be saying the exact same thing, but never the two seem to meet because they can't speak each other's languages. And when I'm looking at it from my perspective, you know, I'm seeing all these different religions and I'm like, you know what? I kind of think that they're all these roads are leading to the same place in one sense or another.
Well, you got to remember too, like there's only one God. I mean, this is something you will come to just out of philosophy. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't even have to really get into religion or anything. There's only one universal source from which everything sprang forth, right? And when everything did come forth from this one thing, there was only one creation story, right? And from that one creation story, as far as we understand, because there's, you know, I don't believe in space, so there's only one earth and one heaven that came from that, right? So now, what's the truth? Well, that's the truth. What I just said, there was one God, there was one creation story, and there's one cosmology. Now we have all of these different cultures, religions, people throughout time trying to make sense of that shit.
Yeah.
And they're wrapping it up in different myths, different themes, different elements, depending on where they were geographically, what time they lived, how much knowledge they had, how advanced they were, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But once again, or you realize what's actually there.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly what I mean. It's like those are all different languages telling the same story, the same creation. It's all, they all know the creation, but when you hear it, it sounds totally different. But if you start to learn the languages, you start to learn that, like, oh, wait, maybe these are kind of coming from the same place. They are coming from the same place. And they're just being interpreted differently. You know, it's, you know, metaphorically, it's just a language, but like, really, it's the customs, the every bit of the culture that's built around it. It builds different in different parts of the world.
Yeah. And this is the other thing too, is like, when you understand the transcendentals, right? When you understand these, then you can take them, this specific set of knowledge, and you can take this specific set of knowledge and go into different myths and be like, oh, there it is. Oh, there it is. Oh, there it is. There it is. I'll give you some examples, right? This is one of the things I did with Kabbalah. Once you realize what Kabbalah actually is, it's number symbolism. It's the study of numbers. It's what it is. You know, you basically did this idea that there's 10 emanations of God, and those 10 emanations are the decimal system. It's 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Well, you can literally go into the Egyptian mythos, and they have the waters. It's literally called the waters of Nun or the waters of Nun, where there was nothing there, like none. And then sprang from this, ultimately, I'm abridging the story, but you had the Ennead formed from this, and the Ennead was nine gods. So you literally had from the waters of Nun, and you have a story that actually unfolds from this, that the first thing was created was Atum, which was Adam, which was one. And then there was a second thing. Yeah, it's great. And you can actually, so you have this waters of Nun, nothing, zero, nothing. And then you have the Ennead, which is nine gods. You have the exact same thing in the Norse myth. You have this tree, the Yggdrasil tree, which grows from basically nothing. There's, in the beginning, essentially, they have the same story. There's nothing, a blackness, right? I think there might even be an ocean there. And then from this, a tree. And what's on that tree? Nine levels. right? Then you go, so it's 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, 9. Then you go to the Christian is Christian angelic hierarchy. Well, we all know the story of Genesis. In the beginning, you know, God, in the beginning, God created heaven and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. So you mean there was nothingness and waters and blackness. And then from that, an angelic hierarchy was ultimately created, which was 9 angels, you know? So it's like, you take these ideas and it's like, you can stamp them onto all of these cultures, be like, oh, you know, the transcendentals say this too. Once you realize that these ancient cultures based their myths and stuff like that on transcendentals, which are things that they're universal for everybody. Anybody can come to it and they will get the exact same thing. One of those being math. 2 plus 2 quantitatively is always going to equal 4. A squared plus B squared always is going to equal C squared. It doesn't matter who you are, right? So when you base myths on that, then you have universal themes that it doesn't, that will always be there. The other one that they base it on is the stars, because the stars by very definition are transcendent. They transcend our material plane. They're metaphysical, meta meaning beyond the physical. We're in the physical. We can't touch the sun. We've never been to the moon. We're not driving a car around on Mars. No one's going to go and mess with Sirius. So when you realize that these myth builders based everything on transcendentals, math and star study, you can take those and then go into these myths and start really making sense of them. Right. Like they're not just some lost poetry that a bunch of, you know, mindless, simpletons back in the day were trying to make sense of their world. So they fuddled together a bunch of shit that doesn't make sense. No, this is crazy advanced stuff.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
That's awesome. I like that. So factual truths of the world are what gave everybody the somewhat similar religious, stories with, sorry, that was put really poorly, but is that what that means?
That's exactly what it is. I mean, once again, like when you get to a place where, let me give you another example, right? This is a really well-known example, something I've written about for 10 years now. The Trinity is another example. The Trinity, it's tri-unity, it's three becoming one. Well, I mean, there's tons of examples where you could find this to be true, a triad and a chord, a triangle where it's three sides or three points coming together to be one. Time itself is a past, a present. We experience it in a linear fashion. It's past, present, and future. It's three becoming ultimately one in this moment of time. So this is that, right? The triangle, the triad of a chord. Time itself are universal things that everyone can experience here, right? Then you go into all these myths and you find we're trinities. Isis, Osiris, Horus, Shiva, Brahman, and Vishnu, Father, Son, Holy Ghost. There's, you know, Fanes, Aranus, and the egg, I think is what it's called, and the Orphic stuff. I mean, you could just go on and on and on with these trinities. The Norse have trinities all day long, Odin, Freya, and Thor, and there's a couple others, right? Well, you know, why, my question was, how is it that all these cultures in their own unique ways are coming up with the same idea? Was because it's just a fundamental truth. You can go and find the Trinity anywhere. You can experience the Trinity anywhere. What is it based on? Universals, math, you know? So once you go into these things with that mindset, things are going to start making a lot more sense, you know, because you're starting with the foundation upon which they worked, as opposed to just going into something you don't understand at all and then trying to fumble your way through it kind of thing.
Is there examples of cultures that didn't have math figured out and their stories don't include that stuff, like maybe Native American cultures?
Even like what you would call like, or would have been called savage societies, but they still had their basics. You know, let me give an example. Look at the medicine wheel. It's a fucking cross. Like, all it is basically, once again, a symbol that's astronomical knowledge, that is knowledge of the cycles of the seasons, understanding that there's pattern, all of that sort of stuff, you know, and, you know, the four corners of the earth, you know, that sort of basic, even the most basic sort of stuff, they still have the elements of the sacred in there. You know, the cross itself is a cult, you know, a symbol that's seen around the world long before Christianity, you know, if we are to believe any, you know, our timeline at all, or, you know, our history at all. But there's lots of native cultures, though, that clearly were wrapping up the same information. In fact, one of the cultures that got me into this long time ago was I was in South Dakota and I was driving through the Badlands. I don't know if you guys have ever been to the Badlands, but
I've never been there, but that's where Rushmore is, right?
Yeah, right around there. Yeah. Black Hills, Badlands, great little place. But I went and the gift shop or whatever at the Badlands, they had this book and it was called The Star Theology of the Lakota Natives. You could tell it was very simple, right? But it struck me. I was like, because I was young, right? I hadn't really got into a lot of the stuff yet, but it struck me so much because I was like, here they were following the same patterns of stars, zodiac, everything, same pattern of stars. They had different star names, but they all considered it sacred, that there was something sacred about it. They had the same elements of as above, so below in their thoughts. And they basically had like same themes of rebirth, death, that sort of thing. And here I'm looking at this and I was just like, well, this isn't like Christian at all. And here these natives were coming up with the exact same ideas, following the same star patterns. They called them different things. Same, you know, I was like, well, when I was young, I was like, what the fuck's going on? Like, how is this native tribe? What, you know, that? And then it took me years and years and years to figure out that you could be separated by geography and culture and time, but you could still come to the same conclusions because they were focused on transcendentals.
Well, we're all looking at the same sky.
Yep.
You know, we're all looking, you know, it's like, if we're all looking at the same sky, we're all going to start seeing, I mean, just take, you know, if you think, doesn't matter what you've been taught. If you're a blank slate and you start looking at the sky, you're going to immediately start noticing some cycles, you know, a daily cycle, you know, light, dark, and then you're going to notice longer days and shorter days. You're going to start noticing, you know, the more you're paying attention, the more of these cycles you're going to start seeing in a bigger, as well as in smaller senses as well too. So it makes a lot of sense, you know, especially like encoding in the stars and things like that. It's like, it's only going to make sense that even if they didn't come from the same, even if the two people blank slates on different parts of the earth are looking at the same sky, they're going to come to some similar conclusions in their observations of these things, I would think.
Perfect example is when I lived in Hawaii, right? So, and you know, when you look at our ecliptic, of course, Scorpio, if you look at where Scorpio and Sagittarius are, the Sagittarius like pulls his arrow back and is pointing to essentially the center of the Milky Way rift. And Scorpio's tail is swooping, you know, scooping up like this and pointing to the center. So it's like these two constellations are pointing to the center. Well, that Scorpio's tail in, you know, to the Polynesian people wasn't a Scorpio because they didn't have scorpions over there. It was a fish hook. Right.
Oh, wow.
And that's what it's called. And it's like one of the main symbols that they use. Like people will wear it around their, you know, as like amulets and shit. And so that alone is like, here, they're literally the exact same constellation. It's the same set of stars and they're pointing to the exact same, you know, set in the sky. So the ancient Polynesians obviously knew about the ecliptic, knew of the cross between the ecliptic and the Milky Way, knew the importance of those stars, obviously have honored it and are, you know, using it in their symbolism. Yet again, another example of what you're saying. We're all looking at the same shit. They're explaining it differently than that person over there. But what is, at the end of the day, what is it? Well, it's that group of stars right there. And that's the same thing we can do with Christ. This person over there is saying it's this, and this person over there is saying this, and this person over there is saying this. Get past it. What's actually there? The transcendence of God, the Almighty.
Yes. Yes.
And that's I would say this, years of dealing myself with some childish spirituality, but then seeing other people deal with spirituality, that is a very adult way of looking at your relationship to God and what's going on with all these religions, you know, You have all these different faiths, all these different religions coming up with all these different things, and everything's different. And you're supposed to choose one of them that's the right one. At some point, you have to sort of laugh at that and be like, that's obvious, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, obviously, I don't mean to rant here, but it's a perfect example of like Christianity. Like, here you have this one dude, right? Christ. And then how many denominations do you have from this? From just being a follower of Christ? Yeah. Endless. They're springing up all the time, you know? And it's like, how? Why? Obviously, the reason there's so many different denominations is because you really don't know Christ.
Yeah. We talked to this guy, Emmanuel Kingman, last week, and he calls himself a follower of Christ. But what he said was, you know, just because we were born here and Jesus is the one that we know about, it doesn't mean that everybody else that's born somewhere else doesn't get to go on to the next level. It's just, we're all praying to the same thing, kind of just their version of it.
I said it like this, you know, I very sort of, once again, like hyper analytical, kind of hellishly bombastic little shit kicking kid. But I was always like, you got to prove it to me kind of thing. Like, I want to know, you know, I said this, I'm like, if Christ is real, right, then I should be able to go into nature, into my experience, and find him without some stupid book, without your stupid tales, without your stupid telling me how this thing is, you know, that kind of thing that I've been told my whole life. But you got to follow Christ, you got to do this. I should just be able to go into the world and discover that truth. Well, that's what I did. You know what I mean? Like, when you realize that Christ squares the circle, and then you can find that, you know, in your entire experience. I don't want to even get into this too much, but you know, there's just so many things. I wrote a whole book on it that it's like, you can know Christ is everywhere around you. And that's what he's supposed to be, you know? So.
Yeah. That gets back again. I'm really digging the metaphor of different languages for the same thing, you know, of that. I'm believing at this point in time that you will find Christ, but you probably wouldn't know to call him Christ or to call this Christ. If you weren't aware, you know, if you were just entirely on your own. But if you're on your own and you really are looking at the world, observing the world that you live in, then you're gonna find something. And I think that's a good name for what it is.
Well, there's this thing, this idea that always like sort of kicked my ass when I was starting this stuff, right? And it was this notion that like you know, Yahweh is known as Hashem, which is just the name in Hebrew, right? And where it's basically like, there is no name for God. You're not supposed to, it's just the name. That's what it said. The Hashem just literally means the name. Oh, it's the name. It's so sacred, you can't even say it, right? And then, and you'll hear this sort of echo in other spiritualities too, like, or Muhammad, you can't draw any image, right? Like that philosophically really hit me, because basically what they were saying is that God truly is transcendent of any stupid name, any stupid small mouth noise or a bunch of letters you can paste together and put on a page and scrawl in blood or whatever. That is not God. God is obviously beyond all that. So in your pursuance of him, you have to understand that fundamental. So people will get, you know, stuck at Muhammad or get stuck at Christ in a name or an image or an idea. And I'm like, you got to break through that. Otherwise, all you're doing is idol worshiping. Because that's all you've done is fabricate some notion of who you think Christ is. And you started, and that's a man 2000 years ago, and he's going to come back and say, and now you're worshiping that. That's idol worship. That's exactly what it is, you know? And so there was that notion. It's like, you got to break through it and realize that God's truly transcendent. So, you know, like you were saying that you could find it, and you might not even know it's Christ, might not be the name Christ, but it's Christ, you know?
It's that thing that's pushing you to be a better person, to find a moral compass, so to speak.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I think, at least in the drama of the human experience, for the theater of human beings, our journey is ultimately a moral one. Mm-hmm. It's about your heart.
Yeah.
It's about how, it's not necessarily like how smart you are, like, even like how hard you worked, right? Lots of people work hard, but they don't work hard towards the right things in life, that kind of thing, you know? Yeah, anyway, I don't mean to ramble on here.
Did Gnosticism bring you to flat earth, or was it the other way around?
No, I mean, pursuance of the mysteries, I mean, obviously brought me to flat earth. So, but yeah, I mean, I just, I'm into it. As soon as I hear about something, I want to find out about it, you know, like a mystery hound my entire life. And so as soon as I heard about flat earth, I mean, it took me about 3 days and I was like, oh, I think the earth's flat.
Yeah.
Because I had a foundation in geometry. That was one of the first questions I asked, because I had enough of like an alchemical mind or whatever, where I could distill all of the questions about that down to essentially one thing. And I did it, I think that day. I remember when I first heard about it, I was like, okay, well, how do you figure this out? It's like, oh, well, the earth, you measure the earth, geometry, you know, if I knew what the curvature was, right? Or I knew what the general shape or the size of the earth they claimed it to be, which means there's specific trigonometry to that. Okay, well, let's test that. And as soon as I found 3, 4, 5 examples that, you know, clearly refuted the trigonometry that they were telling us, I was like, okay, well, it's either a much, 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 much bigger ball than they're saying, or it's flat, you know? And so that's, for me, it was, you know, like, that's really what the conversation comes down to. Measure what you're standing on. You could argue all day long about the sun and the moon and what's it doing and how does the eclipse happen and what's at the fucking edge and blah, 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 blah. You can have those conversations all day long. But really, it comes down to what's under your feet.
Yeah.
And, you know?
Is so. The formula of the 8 inches per mile squared, does that seem true to you?
Well, that's what they claim, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, clearly it's not.
Yeah, that does not seem true to me.
No.
I mean, the amount of videos, like if YouTube's algorithms weren't destroying flat earth, the amount of videos you could just sit and watch for one day proving that 8 inches per mile squared is bullshit, you would just, you know, you could have a couple bottles of wine and get through a weekend and not see all of the freaking videos on that.
Yeah.
You know? So at this point, it's, I don't know. To me, it's like, if you're doing actual science, shit's flat, dude.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, end of story. You know, yeah. We can argue about all the other things. What, you know, what are we in? What is the structure? What is the, you know, blah, 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 blah. We can have those arguments. What is the moon and the sun? You know, but as far as what you're standing on, it's motionless and flat, period.
Yeah, yeah. Sure seems to be.
Yeah.
You know, I had an interesting flat earth thought I'll share with you guys. You know, I was thinking with if you think official narrative with Christopher Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1492 or whatever. Like, you know, the way I was taught that story as a kid, I don't think they teach it to kids the same anymore, where it was that everyone thought the earth was flat. But Christopher Columbus was a crazy guy who thought that it was round and that he would be able to sail around and reach India, but he reached North America. And that's why we call them Indians today, because of that misunderstanding. He thought that he had sailed around the world. Well, doesn't it seem like right then there should be right around 1493, you know, a year later, it would be like, oh shit, that wasn't India. That was some other landmass. Holy fuck, what kind of flat plane are we on that there's this massive land over here? Like, when, I mean, maybe you guys know, when did someone first sail across the Pacific Ocean? Because that would be, if we are living on a round earth, Christopher Columbus didn't prove shit. He just sailed a little bit farther around the round earth. It would be when, how many years was it before anybody sailed the other side to like really connect it all together, which I don't think proves it's round anyway, because it could still be a flat map that someone could sail around like that. But it just doesn't seem like that would be a point that we'd be teaching children, that that's when we learned the earth was round, was when someone sailed, you know, a quarter of the way or whatever.
I think, I mean, when it comes to that stuff, I think they just needed a throwaway story, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it's just like, oh, we're just going to teach you about this bullshit solar system now. So what happened? Yeah. Oh, white people came and killed the natives.
So ridiculous.
White people.
It's so that funny.
Story, but yeah. I mean, yeah. Anyway, history's bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you get, I've said this. I mean, you get past even 100 years, let alone 150, 200 years. It's just forget it. Just forget about trying to say anything objective about what's been written in history at all. Forget it, you know. And even what we know in our time, what's been written in the history books is a lie. I mean, we, you know, look at 9/11. Look at COVID 19. It's like everything that we've lived through has been a lie. But now we're supposed to just say, well, you know, we're going to give 500 years ago. And I mean, it's.
Yeah. With a little poem of in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. That's how we all remember that.
What we've been talking about a lot recently on this show is they just had the 2020 Olympics.
Mm-hmm. Last year.
Last in 2021. And then they have the 2020 World's Fair is going on right now, correct?
Yep, in Dubai, right it's now, just, the 2020 yeah. World's Fair. What? Yeah. Wait, what year is it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think they're constantly fucking with their
timeline. They could say in the future, oh, there was no pandemic. Look, there was a World's Fair in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know that. I haven't been paying attention to any of that stuff. I'm so out of it. So that's interesting. Wow.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy. I mean,
clearly messing with history. I mean, they've, you know, like I did something on Tartaria and how they had CIA documents or FBI documents or whatever that were saying that, yes, the communists came and literally destroyed, I don't know, a bunch of the buildings and things like that to purposefully erase history. It's like
the CIA said that they were, was it the CIA that said they were going to try to get rid of all mentions of Tartaria in the Russian education system as well?
Yeah, or, it wasn't quite as juicy as that they destroyed built. They said that they destroyed buildings, but it's that they wanted to cover up any mentions of the Tartarus history.
Mm-hmm. And this was just like in passing in one document, you know, like you find it. Right. So you can just imagine what the stuff you don't see. And I mean, look at all the stuff that's happening. You remember when Notre Dame caught fire?
Right.
They rebuilt that. I mean, that's yet another. I mean, I don't know what you guys think about that. That just seems to me, once again, they're slowly destroying the past.
Yeah.
You know, you destroy the past, you can make the future.
Oh, absolutely. And
I mean, that's. I think that's part of what goes on down here on Earth, is that I think it's part of the, you know, when God created the place, it's part of the makeup, is that we wouldn't be able to remember history. That part of it would be, you know, that we live with amnesia. So it's always sort of a mystery, you know.
Mystery is beautiful, in my opinion. So it would make sense to have that. I'm going to use the word programmed into us by a creator. You know, even like I'm right here in this basement that I'm sitting in. I'm real connected to my family. This was built by my great grandfather.
Oh, wow.
Over 100 years ago. So like, I kind of have this like close attachment. I can say, well, I know some things in a factual way about the last 100 years up to here. But when I dig into my family, if I go any farther back than my grandfather who built this basement, his father was orphaned in 1860 in Germany. Both his parents, the only thing I'll ever know is I found a book that mentions him and says that in 1860, both of his parents died on the same day. That's it. You know? Wow. So it's like, I find anything that you really dig back on, you hit a wall, and it does tend to be around that 1850, 1860 kind of point.
It really does. I mean, there's something that was happening at that point where, obviously, an uproar in society where they were making major shifts. And, you know, the orphan thing is a really interesting aspect too. A lot of orphans.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I look at, so this is the interesting thing about when I started realizing that the whole narrative of like the colonialists came here and just decimated all the Native Americans, that whole thing. Yes, there obviously was some of that going on. I think it was mainly the federal government sending troops in, and then they blamed it on white people later, when really it was just a bunch of hired guns, like, go kill the natives, we want their land, they're just a bunch of savages. And then the history is told, oh, the evil white people. So I look back at my history, my family, which we know of, which same sort of thing gets to a point and it's just gone, you know, it gets to a point so far back and who knows, but my great, great grandmother, I think is what it was. She is like 100% Menominee Indian. And in fact, where I live is where my original family is from around this area, Marinette and that sort of thing. She married 100% Native American. She married a 100% French man. Right. And not so, he worked at, they worked at the Mayo Clinic together. He was a French translator at the Mayo Clinic and she was a nurse and they fell in love. But we were told this whole story about, think about even back in the day, oh, you're not supposed to mix races and things like that. Right. It was going on because it was part of my family. And then obviously it was like, oh, they just came and just, you know, decimated the savages. And no, obviously that's not what was going on because they fell in love. You know, there was, you know, what we're told about all that stuff is clearly nonsense. You know,
something else was going on rather than what the official narrative tells us of how people lived, how culture was at that time, if that's the case, you know?
Yeah. And America obviously wasn't, you know, whenever the colonialists did get here, because there obviously was some position where at some point in history where there was destruction and renewal and people were resettling the area, when they resettled, this shit was already here. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was some sort of resettling phase. I mean, that seems to be pretty clear. Beyond that, who knows, you know?
Yeah.
The problem is our society gets stuck in these fairy tales.
Right. We're stuck in the fairy tales and we don't look at certain things that are, you know, just so interesting, you know, like with looking into world's fairs and things like that, the ones of the late 19th century and into the 1900s too. They all had these infantoriums where they would have incubator babies, like hundreds or thousands of them. I was just reading about I forget the name of it, but the first Seattle World's Fair, not the one in the 60s that everyone knows about when they built the Space Needle and all that kind of stuff, but one that was in like 1906 or 9. And they had over 1,000 babies in incubators there, and they were auctioning them off. They were auctioning them off, and there's still like some, I couldn't really find too much on it. I need to dig deeper to find it, but there's been like legal cases of certain infants that were never accounted for after that fair. And they're still trying to find them in, like, I think the latest that I read was like in 2006 or something like that. They're trying to figure out what happened to a few of these babies out of thousands that were just on display, and people would go and they'd go, oh, I like that one, I'll put a bid on that.
What was the going cost?
I don't know.
A couple nickels or something?
I mean, you know, who knows? It was probably a very small sum, at least by our standards today.
Yeah, because it costs a lot of money to get adopt a baby nowadays.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know. It makes me play with, I don't know. You know,
maybe we should go to the Dubai World's Fair.
Go see what's exactly going on over there.
Yeah.
Well, it makes me play with really, really controversial ideas, I guess you could say, of like, I mean, what if the Native Americans weren't even here, but that there was something else totally different going on with, I'm going to assume these were mostly, if not all, white babies that were being auctioned off. You know, was there a white civilization here that got massacred and all the babies taken, and then they were auctioned off to new settlers while we had like Polynesians brought in to play parts in these World's Fair like exhibitions, and then they became the new natives, and we said that they've been here forever, but they're all dealing with the same amnesia that everybody else is, and they're just going, okay, this is, you know, this is their new timeline that was introduced to them at that time as well.
Yeah,
I don't know.
There's a whole bunch of people, like, I follow all these crazy Hotep Instagram pages. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole sect of those guys who are like, black people were here on the West Coast, mm-hmm, pre-slavery. And then, mm-hmm, they've been sold that narrative to keep them down over time.
Mm. It's all wild.
They're all wizard spells, you know, especially because this is the other thing that I've just stopped doing completely is like theorizing about anything really, you know, because like you look back in the past and you can't prove any of it. And that's kind of the weird thing about the past. It's gone. And so, you know, like to try to figure out what's happened is, you know, it's constant question marks. You know, all you can say is that we can look back and say, well, whatever we were told about it is nonsense. That is, that's pretty freeing too, because then you don't get hung up on like, all the shit that comes with that. Oh, the evil white man, we're enslaving the blacks. Like, you know, it's like, you know, all of that sort of stuff. My ancestors weren't, you know, that just all of that. So, yeah, I mean, fucking, you know, the crazy thing is that there are people out there that are, you know, making history in this sense. They're as of right now, they're making plans to totally fuck with people's future understanding of history, you know? And it's crazy to think that there are people that do that.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah. Yeah. That willfully do that and want that to happen. you know, that's, I mentioned a moral compass earlier. Anybody doing that does not have that moral compass.
Yeah. And
look, this is what gets into like, that's what I mean. Like when you're talking politics, it's just stop. Just a waste of time. Because when you get, you know, like think about it in a Genesis sense, right? It's like, oh, we ate from the knowledge of good and evil, the tree, and now we know as the gods know, and now we've fallen into this sort of state, right? So apparently what goes on down here is good and evil, right? And the people that are evil are, there's a spectrum. There's that like gradation where it's like you can get extremely, extremely good, you know, and unbelievable amounts of joy and love and all that sort of stuff. But then down here, there's the other spectrum. And then you have to just look at the other end of that. It's just, you can't even imagine how wicked these people can be. So that's what's going on, you know?
Yeah, it's wild. Because you think like it's like that Solzhenitsyn quote is like the line between good and evil is like runs right down the center of a man's heart, you know? Mm-hmm. Like Hillary Clinton's probably loves her grandchildren, you know, but she's a horrible person. Other than that, you know,
she loves them, but she does want to drink their blood.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, the thing is though, is like, that's the thing in a sacred and profane mindset. They're not horrible people to them, because they're in the sacred. They're like, oh, it's totally fine that I eat your babies. That's just what we do. You know, because you're not us. Yeah, you're whatever bunch of, you know, unclean spirits, useless eaters, scum, cattle.
That keeps me going, and the world is a better place because I'm going. That's like a way to look at it from their perspective, you know. So yeah, Marty, this has been really great, man. I know we could go a lot longer with you, but I don't think I'm smart enough to ask any more intelligent questions. Do you want to tell everybody if they want to start dipping their toes in, how they can support you and check out what you got going on?
The site is gnosticacademy.org. gnosticacademy.org is the site. I switched over from Marty Leeds 33. And I do service every Sunday at 9:00 Central Standard Time. And then, you can go to my site and I got documentaries and music and books, and I've got the entire Marty Leeds Mathematical Radio Hour, which was about, 300 podcasts that I did.
Yeah.
And then a new podcast. And then I just wrote a book, Lord Jesus Christ. It's about 550 some pages on basically pursuing the mysteries through Christ, explaining the math and symbols behind Christ and all that sort of thing. And then I'm re-releasing some of my old books. That's coming up too in the next month. So yeah, I've just been doing a lot of stuff lately. But yeah, that's how you can find me.
Yeah, we'll link to the website in the show notes, guys. Yeah, if you want to delve in a little more, if you just look up Marty Leeds and Apple Podcasts, you're gonna find about unlimited hours of stuff to get into. So man, can't thank you enough, and hopefully we get to revisit it soon.
Yeah, this has been a great conversation. I appreciate everything you brought to the table today.
All right, thanks guys, I appreciate it, man.
Yeah.
All right, guys. I want to throw in a quick plug too for Lanny and I's podcast, The World As It Is Today. We've been putting out some killer episodes where we've been getting pretty deep on things about time cycles and daylight savings and all kinds of stuff. Yeah,
the daylight savings one was pretty good.
Yeah. Anywhere you can find podcasts, we got it there. So
cool.
The World As It Is Today.
Right on, guys. Well, thanks for listening, guys. We'll be back soon. All right, we're out. Peace.
All right. Peace out.